Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now here's a highlight from Coast to Coast AM on iHeartRadio.
And we're back with Alan Pierce, journalist, broadcaster, former BBC correspondent and co-author of Coma and Near-Death Experience, The Beautiful, Disturbing, and Dangerous World of the Unconscious. Before the break, Alan, we were talking about, I was asking you why I've never heard about these stories, why this phenomena of drug-induced coma survivors has not been, widely made known, and whether it was being deliberately suppressed by the medical community. So we were sort of in the midst of that conversation when we had to break. Is there anything else you wanted to add to that?
Well, yeah. The funny thing is, and we couldn't get our heads around this for ages, is that no one has actually researched this subject properly before. No one's examined why people are being placed into coma, and no one's examined the events within coma, and also what happens to people post-coma, because they're never the same again. Part of the reason is that critical care today has become a conveyor belt of care, where everyone's so busy they don't get the chance to look over their shoulder at the product coming off the other end. They simply do not see the damage. If you've been on a mechanical ventilator, for example, within a coma, you've got terrible damage to your vocal cords. I mentioned that with Nick earlier. And when you come to, let's say, within your coma, from your coma, you're not in the position to discuss anything you've experienced with anybody. You're moved down the line, invariably, to some care facility. Everything that happens next comes as such a shock, the inability to hold a spoon. You can't stand up. You keep getting these appalling flashbacks. You don't recognize anybody. You've forgotten language. One person told me she didn't even recognize humans. So you've got this scenario, and when a doctor or a nurse is ever confronted with a patient, which is extremely rare, who presents these symptoms or talks of alternate life, that they're just too quick to dismiss these things as effectively a form of mental illness, as I mentioned earlier. Why no one's investigated this in terms of, is it a conspiracy? A large part of this is that when people come out of a coma, they've got these massive holes in their memory, they've got a shocking muscle wastage, joints have calcified, nerves have disconnected, and they just, I don't know, entirely on their own. When they tried to talk to somebody about it, the doctors and nurses would just simply say, oh, these are temporary blips. Your memory, don't worry about it. It will come back. As you move further down the line and you get to speak to other doctors and you mention your memory problems, they they then start thinking you've got early onset Alzheimer's, and possibly you're unaware that other people have been through the same experiences as yourself, and you just think, yes, it's the luck of the draw, I've now got onset, early onset dementia. People don't seem to realize the vast damage that is being caused. And again, a lot of this, as I say, is because these are hospital-acquired conditions. And the people that need to know most, i.e. the staff in intensive care, appear to be the last people being informed of just even making an effort to find out what happens to their patients.
In the book, Coma and Near-Death Experience, there's one particularly disturbing story. It's a woman who experiences what seems to be an ongoing nightmare that, and I don't know how long she was in a drug-induced coma, perhaps weeks or months, but when she comes to, she recalls this living nightmare while in the coma that seemed to go on for years. Can you share that story with us?
Yeah, I mean, there's several like this within the book. Let me give you the example of Isabel. Isabel is a medical professional. She works in one of the finest hospitals in Cape Town, South Africa. And she contracted COVID very early on in the pandemic. And this started turning to sepsis. So her colleagues said, I think the best thing we can do is to put you into a medically induced coma. And she was completely up for it. She was thinking, yeah, okay, fine. I don't want to remember any of this. Put me down. Well, Isabel wakes up within her coma, and this is a common thing that people say they woke up within their coma, as in, like, we fell asleep on the sofa, we just woke up, and here we are in this level of reality. Isabel wakes up within her coma and finds herself in an organ harvesting facility. She says she was kept there for 4 years. They learned how to grow her organs, harvest them, kill her, regenerate her, grow her organs over and over again. For example, she said she had a uterus removed 7 times. This is just one set of things that happened to her. She then listed a whole bunch of lives, one after another, all of which ended in murder or rape and murder or just some appalling event. And just one after another. She also said that she spent 10,000 years on the bottom and top levels of existence. Down on the bottom, it was all mud and funny creatures. And up at the top, it was all ones and zeros. And that she could flip between the two. She was utterly exhausted within her coma with all these events that she just wished she would die. And she found herself dying. And she found herself in a beautiful field of tall green grass, and the breeze is blowing. There's a horse nearby, and it's the most perfect summer's day. This is very clearly a near-death experience. And she walks for a while, and she finds some stairs going up into the sky, wooden, gnarled stairs. And she climbs these stairs, and she says she was 4 steps from the top when she heard her name being called. Isabel, Isabel, you have to come back. She said, I was so pissed off. I just stomped back down those stairs. Eventually, when she's out of her coma and she's on the road to recovery, she goes back to her ICU and she speaks to her colleagues and she tries to tell them about the events she experienced within coma. And they're like, oh yeah? Oh really? Oh, that's weird. And not taking it even remotely seriously. And these are doctors not taking seriously a colleague who's had these experiences, who desperately keen to tell them what's happened to her, and they won't listen. And if they won't listen to a medical colleague, they're not going to listen to a patient.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halper.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season one, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season one, like my producer, Anna.
Oh my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Do the experiences of drug-induced coma survivors differ greatly from people who are in a coma as a result of some kind of a trauma or accident, brain injury, etc.? Do they have any experiences that are similar to drug-induced coma survivors?
Yeah, good question. They do appear similar. Within the book, I think two or three of the coma survivors were in a situation where one case of a lovely guy called Rory, he was in a home invasion and he got battered about the head with a hammer and he was in a spontaneous coma, as it were. And within that, he was having events. He did actually come to within the hospital, but he was what they call agitated. He was like fleeting, desperate to pull all the tubes and things out of him, that they just put him back down again. Somebody else was in a motorcycle accident, and she went into a spontaneous coma, and she had events within that. And again, she came to within the hospital, was agitated, was then placed into a medically induced coma, and then had a whole range of experiences, pretty much like being in Alice in Wonderland in many respects. In other respects, she was entirely in the dark, completely conscious, unaware of her body or anything around her, but in the dark. And she was there for what felt like an eternity. When this happened to her, she'd only just turned 15, and she's in a mind calling out, "Mummy, mummy, please come and wake me up. I've been sleeping too long. Something is wrong." And this is just not understood. Doctors think it's a blank, but some people are paralyzed, you know, like locked-in syndrome, and yet they're completely conscious of events around them. And when that happens, oftentimes events within the hospital ward get transferred into some other kind of event, such as, and Isabel mentioned this, she said the nurses were no doubt cleaning her teeth, but to her mind, she was being held by a kidnapper who'd melted a toothbrush large and inserted razor blades and was slicing into her teeth and gums. That's how she perceived just having her teeth cleaned. When people have a bed bath within coma, oftentimes that's perceived as a form of sexual assault or rape. And another thing that happens is doctors will talk over the patient, the coma patient, not aware that the patient in some cases can hear them. So they're saying things like, I don't think she's going to survive the night. We'll try this one last drug, but I don't think her chances are good. No one wants to hear that. If you're going to discuss these things, do it outside. These things now, to me, are so blatantly obvious. I'm staggered that they're not obvious to the medical profession.
And again, these people are showing no or little brain activity while they're in a drug-induced coma?
Okay, so it's extremely rare, unless you've had a brain injury of some kind, that they monitor your brain within a medically induced coma, exceptionally rare. One of the doctors that's been helping us with the book, Dr. Wes Ely, he's professor of medicine at Vanderbilt. Some time back, he was becoming concerned that his patients were dying, too many of them were dying within coma. And when he got to see them afterwards, he was really worried about what had happened to them. And the things that do happen, for example, he had a 35-year-old woman who's with his patient. She was a mathematical whiz, absolute genius. After her coma, when she went to see Dr. Ely, she couldn't even add up her checking account. Now, she had an impressive IQ of 140 prior to the coma. Dr. Ely had another test taken, and her IQ came up at 100, which is shockingly low. They then put her into an MRI scanner, and instead of the brain of a 35-year-old woman, she had the brain of an elderly woman with dementia. Parts of her brain had absolutely shriveled, and this is what's happening to people within coma. Part of the reason is lack of sleep, which seems ironic because coma effectively comes from an ancient Greek word meaning deep sleep. So from the get-go, everyone's thinking it's sleep. But you're not sleeping. When you switch the brain off, absolutely nothing happens within the brain. It's a bit like having a desktop computer and unplugging it from the mains and then expecting it to work. The brain will not go through its circadian rhythms. As a result, it will not experience REM sleep. When Dr. Wes Ely put his patients on an EEG brain scanner, he was horrified to see that they were flatlining, as close to death as you could get. He had no idea people were being sent down to those depths.
So the brain is unconscious, if you will, or completely offline, but the mind, wherever that resides, is incredibly active.
Incredibly so, because the medical world seems to think that the mind and the brain are the same thing, or somehow that the brain produces the mind, although these are only theories that have never been proven. We are clearly showing here that somebody who would be flatlining on an EEG brain scanner is having a rich inner experience. It might be a lovely one, or it might be something ghastly like Isabel's experiences. But these things are happening, and no one understands it, and no one has investigated it until we came along. Part of the reason is no one takes it seriously. Because I'm a journalist and B's a PI, we came to the subject with completely open eyes, whereas modern science, materialistic science as it's called, actually limits itself to only things that they can weigh, measure, slice up, and put under a microscope. Consciousness, which they can't do any of those things to, is best ignored. So when people have events within coma they can't explain, they just pass them over. They fob them off, which is the best way of describing it.
Did anyone in the book have a predominantly, let's say, beautiful experience while in a drug-induced coma? Were they in a, you know, in paradise?
Yeah, many are. And I think the longer you're in one, and perhaps the closer you get to death, the lovelier it will become. One of the nicest stories in the book, a hospital chaplain from Birmingham, Alabama, Corey Agricola, fantastic guy. He was working at the UAB hospital in Birmingham, and it's a vast place, and he praise music, beautiful music that he'd never heard before or since. And he just had the most exquisite time. And he said that God was showing far more grace as you approach death than you could ever possibly imagine, that this is easing one's passing. It's the most beautiful experience. When he came back and recovered, and he actually recovered very well, he's now able to minister to people within hospital, families who've got a patient within coma. He can talk to them about that, talk to them about, you know, what you can do in the room. In many cases, you can talk to them and hold their hand. They will know. Other cases, they won't have the first clue. But he's now able to tell people, particularly those who are approaching death, what he's seen. He can give them an eyewitness account.
Listen to more Coast to Coast AM every weeknight at 1 a.m. Eastern and go to coasttocoastam.com for more.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.